Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we are talking about one drops in Commander. The best one drops, our favorite one drops you should be playing more. So all things one drops. But before we get to the one drops, we got a crew to introduce, kicking things off with Budget Commander Tomer. How's it going today, Tomer?
I'm doing well. I love talking about Magic cards. I have some cards that I think are like the well-known staples, but then if we go long enough, I have like some spicy budget text that maybe are under the radar a little bit that I can throw in at the end, so we'll see.
Yeah, hopefully we have a good mix of like really good cards, some pet cards. Should be interesting, but we also got another one-drop player in Phil. How's it going, Brewer's Kitchen?
Hey, all. It's shocking how good one-drops are in Commander. Like, when I looked at the actual cards, so many staples. I think we mixed it up pretty good with staples and then going to more fun cards.
Yeah. And then we got Krim, the Asian Avenger. Good morning, Krim. How's it going today?
Good morning. You know, I've all my one-drops, all my actual favorite one-drops are all removal spells. So, don't worry, this week I did not just bring Fatal Push three times. Okay, so we are good.
I almost added Planar Void to my list just for you, Krim, but it just missed. It's an honorable mention.
Cards that I hate seeing played against me.
Before we get to the one drops, we got a couple of sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put in tight and airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service via sending as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about some WotC stuff, potential rule changes, hybrid in Commander, and our top comment comes from Haley Green B. Says, really happy for Seth this episode because some of these takes were crazy. Yes, cards that are banned affect kitchen table players. Just because we play at home doesn't mean we're oblivious to the rules. It feels out of touch when content creators say, just talk to your table, when what we want is rules to help us play the game because you're basically asking us to design and balance every game that we want to play. And I actually thought this was a really interesting comment because I had never really considered before. I mean, really interesting because it was complimentary to me, of course, but even
and the Goldfish account liked it. And I wonder who's running the Goldfish account.
Yeah.
Would that be? But the thing I thought of that I hadn't thought of before that came from this was the fact that when we do the Rule Zero thing, that is kind of putting the burden on the players, right? And I hadn't really considered that some players might not like that when you talk about like, oh, just, you know, talk to your table and figure it out and tell them to take out this card. It is like shifting the burden from the rules of the game to the people playing the game. And I just never looked at it from that context before. I don't know if it changes my opinion on anything, but I never really looked at it that way before, which I thought was interesting.
My quick rebuttal would be that everybody opts into Rule Zero when you're playing Commander because everybody inherently understands it's a casual format. So we all understand on a very basic level, it's a casual format and we're going to make adjustments based on our play group. Like we all inherently buy into that. The problem is where people's expectations are different. Obviously, everybody has their own expectations of what they want in the game.
Yeah.
And that's where the Rule Zero has to happen. Otherwise, like, you just can't play Commander, right? Like, and the it could either be a real talk or it could just be playing against the same people over and over again and adjusting that way. So whether or not you don't like content creators saying Rule Zero is a must or not in Commander, it's the foundation of the format. Otherwise, you know, there's going to be issues.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. Anyway, thank you for sending in your comments. Keep commenting. Maybe you'll be the comment of the week one week. But let's talk some one drops in Commander. So as I mentioned in the intro, we don't really have any hard and fast rules. This is kind of like one drops that we think are good, one drops that we like, that you think you should play more of, all that mixed together. And let's kick things off with Krim. Krim, you have to go first this week. Give us a one drop.
Okay. So I think I'll start off light, something I do really enjoy. And I think, I think Phil, I'll probably enjoy this one. I have put Restoration Magic into almost every deck of mine that has white. It is one, and then it's got the tiered stuff where you get to cure, which is for free. Target permanent gains, hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. Cura, which is target permanent gains, hexproof and indestructible, but you gain three, and then you could pay five total to Kiraga, which is permits you control entirely, gain hexproof and indestructible, and you gain six. So now, I know that for this episode, I could cheat and I could put like three steps ahead or whatever, but I'm not really casting that at one mana, right? But I can cast Restoration Magic at one mana. And yes, it does have the upside to scale into more than a one mana spell, but I have found this card to be a savior for all my things at whatever tier I need it to be. The life gain is actually more relevant than you would think. And on top of that, the fact that you could target a permanent makes this thing huge.
Yeah, I think that's the big upside.
I underestimated this at first. Like, in spoiler season, I didn't really notice. And then I played enough standard to respect it. And now I put it into my own decks. Hexproof and Indestructible is good combinations. The two important ones.
Yeah,
this is a card that...
Oh, go ahead, Domer.
This is a card that, like, I'm very happy about this card existing. But I'm very sad because it's slowly falling out of my budget range for my budget decks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's over a dollar now.
I hope it gets some reprints. This card really is a treat. The flexibility is so good.
And I think, as Krim mentioned, like, the big deal for me is just, like, being able to protect any permanent makes it kind of unique. We have a lot of these protection spells that are good at protecting creatures, but just one mana protect an important equipment or a land or an artifact or an enchantment kind of sets us apart. And the other thing I underestimated is how often you do in the late game actually cast it for five mana and give all your stuff indestructible and gain six life. Like, when you read it, it's like, oh, five mana, that's so much. That's like leaving up an ink shield. I would never do that. But then when you actually play with the card, sometimes you just got a bunch of mana and you draw late and you're like, well, I guess I might as well, like, fizzle this wrath or whatever. So, yeah, good choice.
This card is, the like, one of the first auto-includes I put in, like, a very commander-focused strategy. And white has had similar effects. So, like, Blacksmith's Skill also gives something hexproof and indestructible any permanent. But, like, the thing that really sets us apart is, like, you're the first mode is the primary mode. But then late game, like you said, it's just like, well, now I could just use this to save my entire board. And that's like, it's so
six life is not nothing.
It's not nothing.
It's like incidental life gain too.
Big hit.
I'm even happy for three life. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, let's keep moving on to the next one. Phil, why don't you hit us with a one drop?
I'm going to start with one that it's just a staple. Just want to get some of the classics out of the way. It is Skull Clamp for one, obviously for one mana. One of the greatest design mistakes ever. It's an equipment, equip one as well, plus one, minus one. And then when equipped creature dies, draw two cards. We kind of sometimes forget how good it is. I think, because it's in so many decks for so many years now. I haven't forgotten it being banned in Extended yet when Goblin decks started sacrificing their Goblins, and I still do it very regularly. Like, all the plant tokens from Necrobloom, every commander poops out, like, some 1/1s, and you can pay one mana, draw two cards, and then maybe trigger something that creates a 1/1 if you draw your second card, and then you get something going. It's just such an engine with anything that creates X1s, and it's so easy to tutor up with, like, Urza Saga and Cloud.
Trinket Mage.
The Mage.
There's so many. Just, the new Tazzeret. There's a ton.
Oh, yeah. Just convenient typing, mana value. Oh. And it's kind of cheap these days. It's down to, like $4.50. It's still an uncommon that's expensive, but...
They've done
so
a good job
pre-cons now.
They put in a lot of pre-cons. Otherwise, this card would be way more expensive. But almost every year, we get a commander reprint a pre-con. Is this just
it's still $5.
It's kind of like Land Greaves, right? Where, like, they reprint it all the time, but it's always going to be $5 no matter how much they reprint it. Is this, like, it's got to be one of the best equipment in Commander. I think you can argue Lightning Greaves or Boots, but I think beyond those, this is like in that same tier for me of like one of the just go-to equipment. It doesn't go in every deck. Obviously, you need creatures. Ideally, creatures with one toughness that you can kill. Even though I play in some equipment deck without a lot of X1s and figure stuff's going to die naturally and it's still kind of worth it. But in those X1 decks like Krenko or Chatterfang or anything like that, oh, it's like the best card in your deck. It's so good.
It's so interesting because, like, I had a phase where I thought this card was a little bit overrated. Because, like, I saw, like, an auto-include. People would say it's an auto-include in any tokens deck. And my argument for a long time was, like, well, if I'm in a tokens deck and I want these creatures around, why am I just, like, sacrificing them just to draw some cards? Because then I lose my board presence. I lose those tokens that I want to use. But when I started playing it more, I noticed that just, like, yeah, it doesn't matter. If you're drawing that many cards, who cares? You will draw into other things to set up your board state or whatever. And then, like, yeah, even with stuff like sometimes you're not even actively sacrificing your tokens or your creatures for value. You could just still play this and your creatures are just going to die in Commander. Like, if there is interaction happening or if, like, somebody attacks into you and you just block or whatever like that, you're just going to draw cards.
Solemn with
and,
this.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Once you draw, like, at least, like, four cards of this, it's already more than paid for itself as a card slot. And then anything else is gravy. It's even two, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, because it's just so cheap, right? There's only one to cast and one to equip. So, yeah, you really don't have to draw that many to make it worth it. And then sometimes you do draw that many, and Skullclamp just wins you the game. Just the, like, oh, I need to dig for something. I had a bunch of tokens, so I equip and draw and equip and draw, and oops, I found the thing, and now I win. Like, I've definitely seen that happen to you.
I have blanked this from my mind. I know that it's always been really good, but from the standard days, I am just so tired of this card that I just like when I remember when I moved to Commander, everyone was playing this, and I'm just like I need to get away from this card. So I
they're getting numb flashbacks, like
yeah, like oh my god, I like playing main deck artifact removal, and it wasn't enough. So I just. It's a very, very iconic Magic card as well. So I don't touch the card just because I am personally sick of it.
But it would be so good in your Mardu
humans
deck. It's aristocrat. Think about
it's fine.
It.
I'll wait till something else comes out. Literally anything else.
Well, you can always play, what, Infiltration Lens? Is that the fixed one that they made when we went back to Mirrodin?
Yeah.
There's like, then there's like
yeah,
a black
that
one that
too
does
balanced.
Kind of similar. But, yeah.
Yeah, there's many other real attempts at balancing this.
Mm-hmm. Definitely one of the strongest one drops in Commander, though, I think. No doubt about that. But let's move on to Tomer. Tomer, give us your first one drop.
Okay, this is my favorite one drop in Commander, and it's a simple one. It's a land tax. One white mana enchantment at the beginning of your upkeep. If you have less lands than one of your opponents, you get to search your library for up to three basic lands, put them into your hand. This card is just super, super efficient. You just need to trigger it a single time, and you've drawn three cards. Yes, they're all lands, but just like a single trigger is going to set you up for basically hitting your land drops for the rest of the game. And it also just does so much more without that much work. Like, the baseline is, yes, you're drawing three basics every single turn, but the other thing that it's doing is if you get to trigger it more than once, probably, you get to start discarding down the hands of it. Because I never say no. I always take three, no matter what. I take three, and then suddenly I'm discarding lanes into my graveyard, and I can reanimate them with Sun Titan. I can discard creatures and reanimate them with other spells, too. So it's just really, really good. Like, sometimes you're going to be playing first and there's no green player at the table and you don't find any way of, like, turning on your catch-up ramp. That's fine. It was a one-mana spell. Nine times out of ten, it's doing insane work. And then sometimes, you know, it doesn't do anything. Very happy for that trade. Very, very happy. This card just makes me very happy just seeing it.
It's a card that actually makes me play basics in some decks. It is actually good enough, and you know how I feel about basics. But there are some white decks where I want a bunch of basics, more or less to specifically support land tax, because it's that good. Like, it's just so much card advantage. And the only other thing you didn't mention is And I know the math is a little dubious, but it actually is deck thinning. And deck thinning in a way that kind of does matter, right? If you hit this on turn one, you get like three or four of these activations and your 10 lands out of your deck, 12 lands out of your deck, that actually does end up shifting the math. Taking a land out of your deck doesn't do much, but when you're doing three a turn for several turns in a row, pretty soon your odds of drawing a non-land is actually like starting to increase meaningfully.
Mm-hmm. He said the thing.
I don't know. Really? There is a chance that I've never cast it. I don't know if I put it in decks. I like the card, but I'm almost sure that I've never cast it. If somebody finds a Clash clip where I drew it, I'm always jealous if people do it. I usually forget about it when I'm deck building. And I mean, I like Ketchup Ramp, but I'm pretty sure I never cast it. I admit, though, it's maybe the best white one drop. Maybe we'll find out what's the best one.
It's my favorite. It's my personal favorite. Yeah, also, like, back when white was bad in Commander, like, this plus Scroll Rack. Scroll Rack allows you to take cards from your hand and put it on top of your library. You draw cards, or you put those cards aside, and then you draw new cards. I don't remember how it is. Basically, you exchange the basics that you drew with Flantax for random cards on top of your library, and it just becomes card draw. And that was like that's like how us old men used to also boomer Commander players used to draw cards back in my day. Yeah,
you kids with your troubling pairs and one rings. But yeah, we seriously did have to do stuff like that to draw cards way back then. All right, let's keep moving on. And if we're gonna talk iconic cards, I guess I'll just get these out of the way first because I know people know these cards. I know they're very good, and it's actually a pair of cards that I think makes sense to mention together because you see them together a lot of times. And that is two iconic black one drops in Reanimate and Entomb, the reanimation combo, essentially, where reanimate is one black mana sorcery, put a creature from a graveyard, any graveyard, into play under your control. You lose life equal to its mana value, and then Entomb, of course, one black mana instant, search your library for a card, any card, put it in your graveyard. So this allows for some of the most explosive reanimation lines you can have in Commander. Like, with the help of a little fast mana, Dark Ritual, something, we see Legacy decks do this, and you can do it in Commander too. Like, turn one, you can Entomb the best thing in your deck and just immediately reanimate it. I think that reanimate is probably the more important of the two. Like, Entomb is very strong, but Entomb is almost too strong for me because it's such an efficient tutor. Even though it tutors to the graveyard, if you're playing Entomb, I assume you're playing a deck that wants to tutor to the graveyard, so you're essentially getting like almost a one mana instant speed demonic tutor, which is kind of insane. So I actually exclude it from a lot of decks because I feel like it's just a tutor and it's almost too good. Reanimate's just the card that reanimation is named after. Like, we call so many spells reanimation effects. That's because this card was called Reanimate when it was printed 25 years ago in Tempest, and it still just is the best reanimation, right? It's only one mana. Sure, you lose a bit of life, but it hits any graveyard. So they're really just the foundation of reanimation decks in the format. And if you're playing reanimation and you don't mind playing a tutor, you should probably just play both of them in pretty much any reanimation deck.
They're the best.
Reanimate also super cheap compared to previous price. It's like $6 now.
Yeah, I remember reanimate being like $20 for most of my life. Yeah.
Yep. Reanimate's a staple, right? So, like, and especially in Commander, when you think about like how much life you have, you have 40 life, so it doesn't matter as much if you just eat all your own health. I personally do not play. I love Entomb. Don't get me wrong, I love it, but I've stopped playing it. I've stopped playing that whole combo. I just like fair, honest reanimate.
It's kind of easy. It's almost like too much easy mode with Entomb, where it becomes less interesting when you can always just reanimate your best thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, it is a tutor, right? So Entomb is a tutor pretty much.
Honestly, though, I guess we should say it depends on the power level you're going for. Like, if you're playing Bracket 4, then go for it. But
it's also one of the cool tutors. Like, you can feel clever about it. I don't include it most of the time if it feels too easy. Except for that time where it was super easy and I played this grave thing that auto reanimates something if it's getting put in there, and I just played it as a one mana, just get anything out of my deck onto the battlefield. But that's, I don't know, exception.
There are some cool synergy. Like I recently built a deck that is playing in Tomb, but it doesn't have any reanimation effects in it, but it just really wants Bloodghast in the graveyard. So it's playing in Tomb like specifically to get my Bloodghast so I can like play a land and get it back into play. So there are some weird like little tricks within Tomb that are kind of fun. Anyway, let's keep moving on through our one drops. I think we're back to Krim. Krim, I know you love your one drops. What's next on your list?
Okay. So this is also a tough one because I. Okay, I think there's a new card I've been enjoying, but like I think I'm gonna go with a classic. I still love my Ghost Vacuum, and I think you know this. I think we all know this. I've never stopped singing the praises of it. I play it in Standard. I play it in Commander. I play it when I play Magic. It's just that simple. For those that don't know what Ghost Vacuum does by now, it's a one-mana artifact that taps to exile a target card from a graveyard. You pay 6 to then sack Ghost Vacuum to put each creature card exiled with Ghost Vacuum onto the battlefield under your control with a flying count on it. Each of them is a 1/1 spirit in addition, but can only activate its sorcery. The one thing here is when you do the popping of the vacuum, and then you, like, if something would like were to like board wipe you, all those creatures do go back to the graveyard. But for the most part, this is a win condition and graveyard hate. And more importantly now, more than ever, especially right after Entomb and Reanimate just being mentioned, everybody is doing graveyard shenanigans, and everyone should have graveyard hate. And now with Ghost Vacuum, it's cheap and it's in colorless. It's everyone should just have this. It's so good, and it's one of those things where if someone removes it with removal, it feels so awkward because you're in this position like, oh, it's just a Ghost Vacuum, but also you're building up a million cards underneath there, and I cannot let you get all those creatures.
I feel like this is the most fun graveyard hate spell. Like, most graveyard hate spells are super boring, right? Like, I play a Rest in Peace, no one gets a graveyard. I play a Planar Void or a Leyline of the Void, no one has a graveyard. But this is like graveyard hate that actually actively improves your game plan and is like kind of this weird like creature theft spell on top of it once you get up to enough mana to put the things into play. So I think that makes it so much more justifiable for me to put in so many decks, because I don't really want to just run a Rest in Peace and host the table, even if it is like the correct thing to do win percentage wise. But I can easily justify playing a Ghost Vacuum because it actually does like cool, interesting things on top of being responsible graveyard hate.
And you can saga.
Yeah, that is true.
I gotta admit, it is at least the most fun graveyard hate spell, and it kind of replaced. So I try to have one graveyard hate. Sometimes maybe it's just a Madruga Borg just to eat my veggies. This one's actually fun though, and yeah, I mean sometimes you just get wrecked by it. If you're a reanimator, this one drop just annihilates you.
That is, yeah. There's been some games where Krim plays it and I just kind of groan. I'm like, oh god, no, that shuts down my deck.
I should run it, but I don't. By the way, updates, I didn't get the thing.
Oh no. Is it sold out? We're recording this.
I got the checkout.
Yeah, they got you. They got you. Make you wait an hour. We're recording this during Secret Lair drop sale time, if everyone's wondering what we're talking about. But Tomer is living the Secret Lair experience of waiting an hour in line and then being sadly disappointed.
I'm very happy with
what's
my
that,
experience.
What's that meme? First time? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
All right, fine. I will say, though, like, Ghost Vacuum is kind of wild, though, right? I mean, it is so efficient at what it does. And Tomer, I'm curious, when you deck build, Tomer, how many pieces of graveyard hate do you have now? Just like blanket, like not any specific deck, just on average, would you say?
Well, it's like 2 pieces. It's like Bajuka Bog.
Really?
And then I'll throw in but there's like also, I'm very big fan of the 3-drop, I think it's like Dauntless Escort or something. It's the one that makes a lander token and exiles everybody's graveyards on ETB.
Dauntless Scrapbot.
Dauntless Scrapbot, that's the one. Yeah. I like that one a lot, and it's shown up in a lot of decks. This one I kind of should be running more. I know, I acknowledge that it's good.
The good thing, if you host a reanimator with this, you get the big things. That's just...
Yeah.
It is so good. Yeah. Although it does get a little scary.
I am now noticing I play like probably on average without teching or anything, like probably 4 or 5.
Wow.
Piece, because I've started to play Bogart, whatever, Bazooka Bog Goblin.
Yep.
I have Ghost Vacuum.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, Dauntless Scrapbot, especially in non-green decks, because it's not just Graveyard Hate, it's Ramp. Yep. And then two, and then I'm also playing Espers to Magicite. And this. So, yeah. Like, Espers to Magicite is the three in a black instant where you exile all your opponent's graveyards. Remember this? And then I did it to Phil had a Vel'Koth.
I remember. And you get a thing.
Yeah. This is one of many Graveyard Hates, and I've never feel bad having a Ghost Vacuum because it's only one mana. And I'm running five pieces of Graveyard Hate now on average. So,
woo!
I think at the very least, y'all should at least play this. At least one piece. I think one is not enough with how much how many things are just going wild out of the graveyard nowadays.
I mean, the counter argument to that is you can do a lot of it with just your mana base, which is normally what I go for. With like, you got the MDFC, you got the Bajuka. I guess it also depends on being in black, or else it gets a little bit trickier. But even in any color, you got Asbestos Entertainment, you got Scavenger Ground. So there's two colorless lands now that do it.
Yep.
So I do a lot of it with the mana base, but
those don't further your game plan like this one. Which is the difference.
That's what sold me on this card, was like the amount of times you activate it to exile creatures from your own graveyard that you want to be able to get into play later. That's what made me realize, like, oh, this is more than just like a Graveyard Hate spell. This is actually like a synergy piece that also works as Graveyard Hate.
That's not expensive, too. It's like $2. I should run it
more.
The other one that I really like, too, so the Dauntless Scrapbot, but then also Scampering Surveyor is like a new Psalm Simulacrum. It gets a cave, and one cave that you can grab is Pit of Offerings. So Pit of Offerings, when it ETBs, you exile up to three cards. So that one's also a kind of cool one. Like, if you're running Solemn, you could also run this one, too. And then Pit of Offerings is also a very cheap card. And
that's like uncommon, right? That's got to be like free.
It's really, really powerful ways of hating on graveyards these days, and they do further the game plan. That's what's so good about Ghost Vacuum, is it actually makes you get ahead afterwards when you pop it.
Yeah,
let's keep moving on. Phil, what do you got for us, one drop wise?
All right, I got something that I rarely play, and that is, it's actually two things that I rarely play. It is removal and a pump spell, and it is Berserk. For one green mana, cast this only before the combat damage step, and then target creature gains trample and gets +X/+0, where X is its power, so you double its power, and then at the beginning of the next end step, destroy that creature if it attacked this turn. So it is just a one-hit kill for like Voltron or like sneak attack decks or something. You throw in a big haymaker, double its power, but the card just plays so well. Like, if the opponent attacks somebody else with a big thing, you can just say, this thing is scary, I'm going to make it double scary for you, and then you sacrifice it so it doesn't come at me next turn. And it's just such a cool combination of effects for one green mana that I recently played it on Clash, and I think I might just play this as my removal slot in a way, in mono green or something. It just has so many applications that you don't think about besides just pumping up your own creature. I guess you would still need your own use for this, but I think like 30% of the time there's a good time window where you can kill an opponent's big creature with this and maybe kill a planeswalker or let them hit for big damage with this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really good card. I mean, just the fact that it doubles a creature's power for one mana instant speed.
And trample.
I think that's, and you get trample as well as a bonus, but I think that's even unique now. I'm trying to think of other power doublers that are that cheap, and now don't they start at like two mana for the cheapest one? Like, some of them are like three mana. So just, that's really good. Plus, it's like the green swords to plowshares in a weird way, where you can use it like removal, like Phil said, which is also kind of a cute upside.
Card's insane. The trample is very relevant. Like, you can't even just like be like, I'm just gonna chump luck this big thing, because it's like, oh, now you die.
It's funny. It's funny that you say this card is expensive, which you're right, it is expensive, but I remember when I first started playing Commander, this card was literally like $100 or something,
because
printing was like from the first years of the game. So being $16 or $17, it actually looks kind of cheap compared to compared to what I remember it being at one point. Well, let's keep moving on. Tomer, what you got for us?
Okay. I'll give two more green ones that I start to run a lot on Commander Clash. And they basically fulfill the exact same purpose. This Exploration and Burgeoning. Exploration, you can play additional land on each turn. And Burgeoning is whenever an opponent plays a land, you can play a land from your hand. So Burgeoning looks a little bit stronger, and sometimes it is, but Exploration's a little bit more flexible in that if you have like an MDFC or something that isn't a land on the front side, you can still play it as a land with Exploration. Or if you have like some ways of playing lands from the graveyard, you can use that too. Whereas Burgeoning, you have to have an actual land card in your hand to play. But both of these cards, I think, are really, really powerful in Commander. And I think they only get more powerful as card draw gets more and more powerful in Commander. Because like the downside on Exploration and Burgeoning is if you have like a hand that is like, I only have two lands or whatever, these cards aren't very good. But if you go like churn out like your two, three lands and you drop down like a card draw engine, suddenly these two are like some of the best ramp options you can potentially have. You're just like playing, like if you can play like two plus lands off these, it's so good. And you can play them on turn one too. So that gets you skyrocketing ahead the rest of the table. So this plus like some really good card draw engines, maybe like a commander that draws you cards, and they feel so broken.
Yeah, I'm very curious. Tomer, I am curious. Have you played Exploration Broodship?
Broodship. Oh, this is the one that you can I like it. I like the idea of it, but like the difference is the Exploration starts working on turn one. So like you lose some of that explosiveness from early game. But Exploration Broodship is good.
But then because like I was gonna say that if you get it to 8+, then you get to start just like sacking lands or whatever and then bringing them back, you know, yada yada yada. I do personally like Exploration more than I do Burgeoning, only because you can play an additional land on each of your turns, whereas the other ones is from your hand, which is relevant because I do love playing stuff from the graveyard as well, right? So like a Ramunap Excavator situation. I do love both these cards. These cards are very good, and I was curious if you've been playing with Broodship because I've also really liked that card. But you're right. It doesn't do the thing until you like station it to 3+.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a little more deck dependent, right? Like if you have a cheap commander that you know you can get down in your creature heavy deck and you can turn it on quickly, then I think Broodship is also good. But Tomer's just sold me on the power of both of these cards because you played them a lot over the last couple of seasons. And whenever you have them early, like they just lead to such explosive ramp. Like you just end up with so many lands on the battlefield. So you've definitely sold me on just how strong they are in commander decks and that you should probably run them. And do you just run them in any green deck as ramp at this point? Like is it just you just like a rampant growth or a Farseek or something? You're just like, hey, I'm in green, I'm gonna play these.
Unless I'm budget, you know, like they're expensive. Yeah. They're both expensive cards. But like, yeah, like as long as if you believe in card draw, I feel like these cards make good. Also, if you like bounce lands, they also work very well with both these cards, right? Like you play a bounce land, you return a land to your hand, you immediately play it with Exploration or something like that. So I don't know. They don't really require that much building around. Like you should be running a lot of card draw anyway. I think they're easy to just jam in and not think too much about it.
I prefer the Exploration over the Burgeoning. I feel like with Burgeoning, it's scarier than it is or looks scarier. Like it's usually after two lands or something. Like if you play it on turn one, you keep a five lander with this on turn one, but you can't have too many land drops of this. And then Exploration, I think in dedicated land decks, it's way more likely to have lands from the top of your library or the graveyard and get value this way. And then I think Exploration gets more value over the first few turns. And I mean, I love both with Bounce Lands. That's the...
I think that's true. I think Exploration gets more value over the long run. Burgeoning does lead to potentially like an incredibly explosive turn one, right? Like if you just get to end up putting like all of the lands in your hand into play by the time it comes back to your turn and cast a four drop or something, which is just so explosive. But yeah, I think Exploration might be somewhat better overall. But let's keep moving on. I got a brand new card. This card actually hasn't even released yet. It's coming out in Avatar, The Last Airbender. But I think this card's going to be really good. And I wanted to talk about a new card. So we're going to talk about it. And that card is Redirect Lightning. So Redirect Lightning, one mana instant. It's a lesson. It's a red card. It says, is an additional cost to pay this? You either got to pay 5 life or 2 mana. And then you change the target of spell or ability with a single target. So this is essentially, it's a Tomer card. He loves his redirect style effects. He plays so many of these. Return the Favors, Untimely Malfunctions, Bull Bends. Also compares sort of to Deflecting SWAT, kind of similar to that, in the same vein. And I think what's interesting about Redirect Lightning is that it is legitimately 1 mana. Like, if you pay the 5 life, it is 1 mana redirect the spell. As far as I have seen with my researching these cards, we've never seen this effect that cheap before. Like, I know Bolt Bend can do it if you have an expensive creature on the battlefield. It can be 1 mana. I know Deflecting SWAT can be free, but you gotta have your commander on the battlefield. But we've never had just straightforward 1 mana you can cast this spell. And I think that that makes it a very powerful effect. Only need to leave up 1 mana. Plus, we're playing commander, so you have 40 life to start with. So paying 5 life doesn't really intimidate me too much in a commander deck. Plus, you have the upside, kind of like we were talking about with Restoration Magic, that later in the game, if you do have some extra mana, you can just pay 3 for it and avoid losing any life on it. But Tomer, you play these cards way more than I do. I like this card in specific just because it's so efficient. But I'm curious what you think, because you're the biggest redirect believer I know. Like, what do you think of Redirected Lightning?
I think if you're looking for a redirect, it's the best one. Like, the only one that I think has as a shot against it is like Deflecting SWAT, because it's legitimately just free when you have your commander out. But if you don't have your commander out, and the commander's not a guarantee to have that always. Like, sometimes you have decks, like, let's say you're a partner deck and you have a two drop and a three drop as your commander, probably Deflecting SWAT's going to still be better. Or you have something that, like, once you play, that your commander comes out early, but it's like an Indestructible God or something, and it rarely gets removed or something like that. Probably Deflecting SWAT is going to be better. But for most other situations where the commander's not out all the time, I think Redirect Lightning is just the best option overall for most decks. And, like, yeah, like, three, like, if the five life is a lot, but, like, later on in the game, you don't actually have to use it for, it'll lose 5 life. You could just pay 3, and 3 is fine. So, like, I think that's great. I still like Return the Favor more of a redirect, just because it has more use case scenarios. Right. But I think, like, if you're looking for protection from targeted removal in red, like, this is, for that purpose, it's this. This is really good.
Especially, like, it's, you said, if you're trying not to protect your commander, then it gets even more important. Because if your goal is only to protect your commander, then the Deflecting SWAT should be on to protect the thing you want to protect. But if you're trying to protect something else, you might not have your commander. But yeah, sorry, go ahead, Phil. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's always such a blowout if you redirect a removal spell. It's brutal. Yeah. I should play more of these, actually.
What do you think of this one, Grim?
I love Redirect Lightning a lot. So I, because of exactly what you said, the 1 mana, is always going to be 1 mana, but most importantly, because it has Zuko on it. So I like it. Just, this is me just going, I love it because Zuko, my favorite sad boy, is on it regardless. So it just happens to be a good card on top of that and a key moment of the show as well. So yeah, I think this is a cool card, and I'm more than, let's not lie here, no one's ever paying 2. I'm just gonna pay 5 life every time. So
in the late game, sometimes you might just have so much mana that you're like, yeah, I might as well. But
maybe,
yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I'm playing around the spell pierce forever. All right.
Well, let's move on to a card that has already been printed. Grim, give us another one drop.
Well, okay, so I mentioned a new card, and it's Peter Parker's Camera. This is another 1 mana artifact that when it enters, you put like 3 film counters on it, and you pay 2 to tap it, remove a film counter from it, and then you get a copy an activated or triggered ability you control and choose new targets. This card is just really cheap. And the fact that, like, it is only, like, one mana to, like, put on the board, sit around, it's also not... You know, when we talk about things being so good that it's bad, that it gets you all the aggro, this is limited, right? You see the three foam counters. It doesn't necessarily get the whole table up in arms. It slides under the radar. You get some really good copied triggers off this. Like, whereas if I play Panharmonic on or something, right? People are like, ah, okay, I need to remove that, right? I need to remove that or the player. No one's going to care about Peter Parker's camera. And I think that this copying triggered abilities is also really nice. And it's going to, again, just slide under the radar enough for such a low mana investment.
Yeah, this card's insane. Like Krim said, it slides under the radar. Because it won't have, like, one huge turn, right? Like, it's not going to be... Like, if you drop a Panharmonic on, people are afraid that you're going to get, like, a bajillion triggers, you know, instantly. And sometimes you will, and it's like you win the game off that. This one is just, like, a very good engine. And it does all the similar tricks. Like, I love the fact that you play a fetch land or whatever, and then you crack it, and you pay two mana, and you double ramp off it or whatever.
Yep.
It's just very good. And, like, yeah, okay, you can only do it three times. Like, you could proliferate it and stuff, I guess, if you really wanted to. But you don't have to. Like, getting three shots on this over the span of a turn, more than enough value. And I don't think it's big enough of a threat that people are going to be like, oh, God, we got to get rid of this.
It's so funny because the upside of this card for me is that it's not a combo piece. That sounds kind of contradictory because you would think, well, it'd be better if it wasn't limited to only three activations, right? And it didn't run out of counters. But if you play as Tyrannic Resonator, like these similar cards, my brain immediately goes, oh, that's a combo piece, right? They just played half of their combo. I better deal with them before they draw the other half of their combo. If you play Peter Parker's camera, I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cute. They might copy a fetch land or something, but it's not going to do any real harm because it's going to run out eventually. So I think the fact that it's not a combo piece is a really big deal on this card.
Man, I should probably replace my Astrionic Resonator with this in some decks. I won't.
It's a good idea.
If you're
idea
just using it
won't.
For value, I think it's actually just better. You lose infinite combo potential, but I think it's
copying
just more efficient.
Activated
right?
abilities is very cool, though. I got it.
Yeah.
It doesn't enter tapped, which, I mean, Resonator doesn't too. It's one less mana.
The first time you're, like, not in green and you crack a fetch land and you copy it with this, you're just going to ride that high all game.
Ooh, that was the play of the game, you know? Like,
Ooh, all right, let's move on to Phil. Phil, what do you got for us?
Okay, we're going from staples and expensive cards to a card I just like. And I recently ordered another one for another deck, and it's Hard Evidence. For one blue mana, you create a 0/3 blue crab creature token, and you investigate, so you get a clue. It doesn't seem like much, but it feels like such a clean turn one. You have a 0/3 blocker that's just keeps the beats away, the value beats, and then you have a clue, which means you can... It just replaces itself. Maybe I like it as much because the decks I played in make very good use of it. Like my Rule Zero Commander Brewer's Chef deck, where you need differently named tokens. So this makes two tokens for one mana. And then the other one is Manios Kalga, which draws multiple times of this. And then, I mean, Manios Kalga only draws one of this. But then you draw your second card and trigger something else with the clue. I don't know. It's just one of my comfort cards. There's an old border foil of this. And I feel like in one mana 0/3 that replaces itself, you should probably get some more value than just this. Maybe you get value out of the artifact tokens or something. But as soon as you get some value out of this, just an 0/3 that replaces itself later plays very well, I think. So you don't get beats by Solem and all the everything below 2-3 mana. People just don't want to hit you for value. And the crap is cute. And it's a clue.
This is a most Phil card. Like, when you started reading this card, I was like, that sounds exactly like something Phil would play in his decks. And I think, like, it does have a lot of value, and it's only one mana. The other use case for it that I think we didn't really talk about outside of, like, value and tokens is it is a card that puts two tokens on the battlefield for a single mana. So if you're playing, like, Murderclad Shenanigans or something, that's kind of good. And the other place is, like, Polymorph-style decks, like, because this is a way you get a creature on the battlefield that doesn't require being a creature in your deck if you're trying to do, like, polymorph things where you, like, destroy a creature and then get a random one from your deck. It's a way that you can kind of, like, control that, right? And make sure you hit your big bomb and not some random thing in your deck, which is kind of cute. I know, like, a Luna combo I played a long time ago played this card as one of the pieces that you could, like, a Luna onto without having a real creature in your deck.
It's narrow, but it's a lot of value. I know I played it in my crab deck. And it was one of the best crabs.
One of the best crabs.
That actually
it's
might
like
be
a lot of value for one mana. Like, tokens is good.
And then you got a caretaker's
I was
talent.
Like, okay, hold on. Is there a combo? Why is this on here?
Nope.
Right? Like,
it's,
like, okay.
It's crabs. It's
some no, okay, yeah. And we're just making two tokens, and that's what we're here for. Hell yeah, brother. Do what you need to do.
And a clue. It's an artifact. Maybe
yeah,
makes
yeah.
your frogmite cheaper.
All right, let's move on to Tomer. Tomer, what do you got one drop wise?
Okay, so we're gonna move on from, like, staple-y cards to some of my pet cards, and I got two of them that kind of do the same thing. I know the term is called saboteur effects, apparently, because Scryfall has the tagger system of saboteur. So there are two cards that ramp. They're auras. The first one is Sticky Fingers. It's one red mana, enchantment aura. Enchant creature. Enchant creature has menace, and when it deals combat damage to a player, create a treasure token. And when it dies, you draw a card. And the other one is One with Nature. One with Nature is also a one mana enchantment. It's green, and whenever the creature attacks, is that what attacks? No, deals combat damage to a player, you may ramp out a basic land. Both of these cards, one drops, good if you are attacky, and they're low enough in terms of your requirements for it. Like, you just, it's one mana that, like, eventually the creature might die. Who cares? You lose the aura. But, like, one hit on these and they already kind of pay themselves off. Like, One with Nature, if you enchant a creature and you hit a person and you ramp out one card, you've already ramped out a land for one mana. Like, that's already good. Everything else is gravy. Sticky Fingers, not quite as strong, but it does give you menace. And when the creature does die, you draw a card. So it actually has its own benefits, too. I really like both of these. I play them a ton. And if I'm a deck that, like, likes attacking, these cards go in.
Yeah, they are pretty good. I just want a Sticky Fingers altar that's like that one guy your LGS with the Dorito hands or the hands. Like, that would be so perfect. But no, the cards are good. You do need to be specific decks, right? Like you said, you need to be an attacking deck with a lot of early game creatures. But as you also said, you don't got to get that many hits in with these for them to be worth their mana cost, because really two or three hits is, like, amazing. And when one with Nature, one hit's very good. One mana rampant growth.
Do you also like playing, what's the pickaxe or whatever? There's a one
diamond pickaxe.
Diamond pickaxe, is that the one? Yeah, when you connect with that, you make a treasure as well.
I play them less just because they're less mana efficient. Because you have to pay three mana to get it going. Mm-hmm. But, and Sticky Figures just is just like one mana. But, I mean, I think they're also good in, like, the similar decks. I just run them less.
Yeah, because it's two to equip, right? So, yeah, you can't do it
as
early.
So it's like three mana
early.
Total.
But it is indestructible. The diamond.
It is indestructible.
And
if you're playing
you
for a
plus
longer
one,
game.
Plus one.
Yeah.
And you can make Minecraft references.
Yes. Yes.
they yearn for the mines. Yes.
The Sheldon yearn for the mines.
All right. Let's get to my pick. And this one's so tough because there's really two cards that I want to shit out that are just, like, some of my favorite gacha cards. But I think I'm just going to go with Darkness. So Darkness, I don't know if this is, like, a staple level card, but I play this card in pretty much every black deck because I am a big fog believer. And in some ways, Darkness is the best fog. Darkness literally is just fog, right? One mana, instant, prevent all combat damage will be dealt this turn. But what makes Darkness so much better than most fogs is it's the only real black fog, unless I'm forgetting one. But, like, it's not something you expect a black deck to do. If you play against a green deck or a white deck, you might have fogs on your mind. It's kind of the same exact thing as the power of Mana Tithe, which was the other card I was thinking of. Mana Tithe, one white mana counter his spell unless his controller pays one. The power of the card is it's a white card. If you're playing against a blue deck, you expect someone to counter you. But if you're playing against a white deck, you don't have counter spell in your mind. And I feel like the same thing is true of Darkness. If you're playing against a black deck, you're not thinking fog as much as you would against some other colors. And we have seen some huge Darkness blowouts on Commander Clash. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we all have played Darkness at one time or another. And we have had some games that really come down to, does Krim have the Darkness in hand? Does Seth Strom or whoever, do they have the Darkness in hand? And it seems like a lot of times they got it. But yeah, I think, do you guys play Darkness as a staple? Like, is it just like, if you're playing Mono Black, do you just slot in a Darkness?
Yeah, I mean, why not? It's so efficient at what it does, and it's in mono black. So, like I don't know, it gives you a fog in mono black, and it's nice. And then on top of that, like maybe I'm playing Grixis, I don't get access to green, so it's nice to just be like, hey, I don't want to take damage this turn. So, and it's for such a cheap cost. And then on top of that, they have that
except
really cool
for money.
Like,
it is like $10.
Is it $10?
Yeah,
Jesus.
That's the cheapest one. The special guest is 10. The other ones are just 14 to, I mean, time shifted foil, which, oh my God, it looks very good. And $90. Oh my Lord.
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, luckily for me then, I have cheap taste. I like the prevent all the giant EOE sci-fi novel looking one. Give me that
fine.
One.
I like cheap.
Lizard with the brain hanging out. That the art on that one's kind of wild.
Yeah. My aesthetic preference is cheap. I am definitely fully on board the philosophy that like every deck having like one fog somewhere in the deck is good. I usually don't go above one fog, but having just the one, it's really nice because that means you're probably going to draw it in later on in the game. That's when you
want
to see a fog. Yeah. And then if it's one mana, it's very easy to hold that mana up. So, yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, it's a good one. So, okay, we've done some rounds of talking about our one drops. To wrap things up today, I want to ask you guys, what do you think the best one drop is in Commander? And this might be a horrible question because I have a feeling every one of us is going to say Sol Ring. Yeah. So if everyone says Sol Ring, I'm curious what you think the next best one drop is. Let's just exclude. Is there anyone that's going to argue against Sol Ring technically being the most powerful one drop in Commander? Yeah, okay. If we're all in agreement on that, what's the second best? What's the second best? We'll set aside Sol Ring. What do you think the best one drop is? Because I think this question is actually kind of tough because even cards we didn't mention, you got Swords to Plowshares in white, you got Brainstorm in blue, like every color has some very, you got a bunch of creatures, Esper, Vampiric Druid, you got Esper Sentinel, you got Mother of Runes, like there's a lot of really good one drops, but what is your guys' personal pick for just like, discount your personal tastes or whatever, your pet cards, what's just like power-wise the number one one drop in the format?
Malakir Rebirth.
I'd probably go for Vampiric Tutor. I feel like that type of card really, it scales with how powerful your deck is, right? Like if your deck is pretty low powered, I don't think Vampiric Tutor is going to be very strong. But if you have a very, very powerful deck, Vampiric Tutor keeps getting better and better. And it's generic enough that you can just like shove it in any deck and it'll do great things, I guess.
But, like, okay, so, like, what format are we? We're talking about casual Commander, right?
Yeah, not CDH. Like, what we play on Clash, basically. Something along the lines of what we play on Clash.
I hate to say it, but this is going to sound wild because, A, I don't play tutors, right? Because I think tutors kind of just are really strong and going to draw aggro because, you know, yada, yada, yada. So the so good, it's bad. I actually am now turning around on Soul Warden.
So bad it's good. Swords of Plowshares. Soul
Warden. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Soul Warden.
It's so under the radar, except for, like, it's not.
It's not under the radar.
It's, but it's not the most aggressive thing, except for Tomer, who rightfully kills it every time.
But
I watched that man jump through some crazy hoops to kill my Soul Warden instantly. And I think Soul Warden will gain you so much life now that I'm starting to think it's really good. Without it being a Soul Ring, without it being all these overly busted things, this is one of those cards where it's going to sit on the battlefield and it'll accrue you so much life that I think it actually will play a lot better than you would give it credit for. It's not flashy. It's not Esper Warden. It's not any of those cards or whatever. Esper Sentinel.
Yeah.
But Soul Warden is the one that just is exactly right there where it's strong enough where people have their eye on it, but you know it's not the best threat.
I feel like every time we've seen it on Clash, it has done so much work. I'm trying to think of a Clash game where, like, Soul Warden just wasn't good when it showed up. And I'm having trouble thinking of one. I'm sure there has been a game where it just died right away and did nothing. But it seems like most games where it shows up, it ends up gaining 10 or 20 life for one mana. And it adds a body to the battlefield. So I've been a believer for a while, but I think you're right. Like, it just consistently overperforms.
That's also... Yeah. They're a little more niche, but Raghavan and Ocelot Pride are also insane impact if you get
Ocelot
the
Pride
value
is
they
absurd
want.
Card.
Yeah. Ocelot Pride might be. Ooh.
Yeah, that, Sarah Ascendant
might
no
be too
B.
good.
Oh, Sarah Ascendant. Ooh. I mean, we actually, didn't even talk about a lot of creatures here, but.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There's a lot to mention.
Yeah.
But Sarah Ascendant draws the aggro, though, right? It draws the ire of the table. Yeah,
but
sure, you are.
What am I
going to
do about a turn one?
Yeah.
I mean, we also didn't mention, speaking of creatures, a whole class of cards, which is mana dorks, right? Like, Birds of Paradise, right. Llanowar Elves, Elvish Mystic, Delighted Halfling, which I know some people like them. Some people, Deathrite Shaman, like, some people
that,
like them,
okay,
some people
maybe.
Don't. But there are some good mana dorks. We didn't mention Dark Ritual either, which I think Dark Ritual might actually be in the conversation for, like, strongest one mana, one drop in Commander. I don't know if it actually beats out, like, the other cards you have mentioned or, like, Reanimate, but I think it is, like, in that top tier of really, really powerful effects to you.
Mm-hmm. Man, there's so much.
Oh, Mystic Remora. Mystic Remora might actually be my pick.
Mystic Remora is one word, yeah.
Even the way we play, it's still busted. Yeah. And if you play it in CDH, it's, like, even more busted, I think.
Yeah, if you play it in CDH, then it's, like, one of the most powerful cards.
But I'm talking about, like, us at the table for casual. I feel like every time I've played Mystic Remora in my casual decks, I've taken him out.
Really? I always don't put it in because I assume that we don't play Rhystic Study, so I'm just not going to play that either because it's too good. But I haven't cut it because I thought it was not good enough.
I feel like it's a little like Carpet of Flowers. Like Carpet of Flowers is another one where if the table lines up with it, it's just absurd.
Insane.
Maybe Carpet is worse than Remora. Because, like, if you play against Mono Blue and they play, like, island after island, and then you kind of just get their lands. But I've been cutting... I opened a Carpet, and I sometimes put it into decks until I cut it again because it has no synergy with anything. Yeah. I don't play an Enchantress deck or something. The games where it's good, it's just absurd.
I feel like Mystic is, like, an interesting one in that, like, the lower power you go... the less value you're getting out of it. Because in CDH, everybody's casting are like these 0-1 mana non-creature spells. Like that's predominantly what most of the decks are composed of. And nobody's going to delay their turns. Like I feel like everybody could just agree. They could be like, all right, the person played Mystic Remora. We can all agree not to cast spells for a turn and we'll be fine. But even then, like the person who's like, well, I didn't keep any more lands. I need to cast spells or else I'm not doing anything. I don't know. It becomes a big issue. I feel like there could be playing around, but it's very difficult at CDH. And then our art level, I don't know. I feel like if you play a Mystic on turn one, you maybe will draw a card, maybe two maximum. Like if other people are going on turn two and they want to play like a Signet or something, then they might play into it. But, like, you're not going to get as much as you would at, like, higher power tables. And then sometimes people are, like, especially in casual, people are much more heavy on, like, creature-heavy decks. You know, like, I want to play my dragon deck or whatever. I want to play, like, a Kindred-style list. And then it becomes even worse. So I feel like it's still good at our level, but it's definitely not the same level as what it is at high power.
I would agree with that. I think my argument for it being good, even the way we play, is just like it's only one mana. So even if you draw two or three cards for one mana, like you build Ancestral Recall over the course of a couple turns, like that's still like good enough value. One last card to shout out, because I think if we didn't have our house ban list, this might actually be the answer for the strongest one mana play in Commander. But because of our house ban list, because of Richard mostly, it's not as good anymore. But Crop Rotation is actually like if you have Glacial Chasm and Field of the Dead in those cards, Crop Rotation is like not only is it a tutor, but it tutors the thing to the battlefield. So it's a darkness too, because you get Glacial Chasm, so you get a fog, or you get the Field of the Dead, like whatever you need, Maze of It. Like it's ridiculous. Gates.
We didn't even Talon see Talon Gates with Crop Rotation, I think, right? Because of our house ban list. But it is in some of my decks, and it's just another fog, pretty much. Or a protection. So oh my god. Anybody ever seen Rent is Due? Sorry to just add another card, but
that was a card that
we haven't seen it played yet.
No, I was actually thinking that card's good, but then I've kind of blocked the Spider-Man set out of my mind, so I never think about putting the cards in my deck. But I actually think that card is like playable in like a tokens deck or like a treasure deck, some sort of like trinket style deck. So I think it could be good, but I haven't tried it yet.
I like this. I like a lot of the cards of the Spider-Man set. I'm so sorry. I do actually like it. But Rent is Due is the only one that kind of rubs me the wrong way because like I'm playing in my escapism game. And don't remind me that Rent is Due.
Yeah, but
your credit card interest rate has gone up, Spidey.
I'm like, imagine like they're gonna release a card like your credit rating went down.
Yes,
you missed the payments. Well.
Avatar's got honest work, and then you've got Rent is Due. Yeah. Dude, you got it all right there.
We're just gonna build 9 to 5 actual deck. Life. Yeah, 9 to 5.
Yeah.
9 to 5 dot deck.
Redefining taxes as actual taxes.
And land tax, dude. Oh my
Whenever
god.
Whenever you cast a spell, do you pay the one, you have to fill out a form.
Oh my god.
W9.
Just fill out the card.
On that note, I think that brings us to the end of our One Drops in Commander podcast. So let us know what you think. You got a favorite one drop? Let us know about it in the comments. What we get right, what we get wrong. Let us know that too. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander, maybe about some new Avatar cards potentially. So make sure to come back for that. Until then, everyone, have an amazing week, and this is the crew signing out.